Ladies and gentlemen, the Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this special Epic Film Guys Minisode, where we are going to review Star Trek Beyond for Wednesday, July the 27th, 2016. It's my birthday! Yeah, motherfucker, I am Epic Film Guy Nick.
And I totally forgot about your birthday, Epic Film Guy Justin.
That's kind of why I said it, because I want you to lavish praise upon me for it being the date of my birth.
No, I knew it was coming up. I did remember, so... I'm home alone, man. My wife's gone in Austin until Thursday, so...
Facebook would have told you so.
It would have told me the day before, yeah.
It would have, yeah. But we are here, Justin. We had the opportunity over the weekend to record yet another crossover with our brothers down in Perth, Paul and Wayne, on the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. I know I had a blast. I know you had a blast. I know they had a blast. It's always such a great time to get to talk to those guys. I wish we could do a fucking crossover with them, like, every week. But... on that crossover, aside from counting down the best television shows that were adapted into films, we also talked about Star Trek Beyond. But I know that we had a lot more to say about it, so we are going to go ahead and offer our full reviews here in this minisode. So Justin, I did write out a review of this film, but I actually want you to kind of get into this a little bit first, and then I will plug in pieces of my review as we go.
Okay. Well, as everyone knows, this film has not been as heavily anticipated as we would all hope it would be after Into Darkness. Now, the majority of people out there really enjoy J.J. Abrams' reboot from 2009. Into Darkness was a mixed bag. Critics really enjoyed it, but fans were kind of mixed on it. And when Justin Lin, director of a lot of the Fast and Furious films, was announced as the director taking over the reins for Abrams, there was a lot of controversy. That man's not the right man for the job. He directs a bunch of movies about cars going fast. He doesn't know anything about Star Trek. You name it, people were hating on it. Of course, they're fanboys. That's what Trekkies do. But as we would all know, that first trailer hit, and a lot of people did not like that trailer. Nick, you and I actually even commented on that ourselves, that it really didn't do much for us. You know, it kind of just painted a picture of a movie that really didn't feel like Star Trek. However, the second trailer kind of gave us some hope and looked like it could be a promising picture. So the story here, following the events of Into Darkness, we have the USS Enterprise crew exploring the furthest reaches of uncharted space, and they encounter a new ruthless enemy, who of course puts them and everything the Federation stands for to the test.
Where did you get that synopsis from?
Oh, well, I, you know, kind of just found it somewhere randomly.
Yeah, well, wherever you found it from, send it the fuck back, because it's not uncharted space, because there's a goddamn Federation outpost called Yorktown
there. Hey, Nick, we're supposed to be a non-spoilerish podcast here, and you're throwing out a major plot point right in the beginning of our review.
It's literally like the first 5 minutes of the movie. They get to Yorktown.
Gee whiz, man.
We are going to... this will be a spoiler-ish review. Just keep that in mind. Folks, if you haven't seen the film and you don't want it completely spoiled for you, actually, go listen to our episode that we did with the guys on the Countdown, because that is a spoiler-free review. And we'll post a link to that episode, of course, in our show notes. And if you're not listening to Paul and Wayne already, subscribe. Listen to their show. Their show is great. I love their show. It's awesome. All right. But Justin, I wanted to jump into my review here, and you actually kind of plugged a lot of stuff in there that I was already going to mention. Of course, this is the third film in this reboot series, as you mentioned. I actually really loved the 2009 film, and I know you did as well.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Star Trek films ever made.
Yep, and I know you're not the bigger fan of Star Trek Into Darkness. I know you were a little less enthusiastic about it than I was, but I actually enjoy it even more than the 2009 film. It flips the script for Wrath of Khan completely on its head, and it further shows how the changes to the continuity in the original film are going to lead to this radically different future for the original Trek crew. I know it didn't necessarily need to do that, but I thought it worked really well. And it also, it's got these great thematic ties to the danger of a militarized Starfleet, searching for preemptive war amongst the stars and offering a scathing criticism of the preemptive war mindset of the modern day military industrial complex. I thought the Into Darkness script, you know, of course, Benedict Cumberbatch is Khan and he's not Ricardo Montalban and we all have a problem with that. I get it. But I really, really like those two films. So when this third film was announced to me, and Justin Lin, I've never seen any of the Fast and Furious movies still.
You've seen the first. Tell me. You've no. had to have seen the nope. first. No, not that he did that one, because I don't.
No, he did three through six. He did three through six. And no, Fast and Furious, they don't appeal to me whatsoever, because I don't care about cars. I'm not a car guy.
The last few were really fun. The one that came out.
I've heard, well, starting Furious with five, seven. The one that The Rock shows up in. The first one.
Well, The Rock's great. The chemistry between the characters in the films and the way they look, it's way, way further beyond what the original concept was, you know, and I think they're fun movies, you know, that you go in for a good laugh, a good enjoyment, but it's not by any means like quality filmmaking, but it's good. As far as direction, Lin is pitch perfect as far as making a well-directed film for what the subject matter is based upon.
Yeah. So it'd be the Enterprise, you know, they get to Yorktown, as we already mentioned, and they meet this character at Yorktown named Calera, who says her ship crashed on a planet on the other side of this nebula. All right. So the Enterprise zooms through the nebula really, really quick. And, you know, they get attacked by this swarm of really, really small ships. Now, I had a lot of problems with this movie. We're going to get into a lot of them as we go through the review here. I was very, very mixed on this film. Much to Justin's chagrin, probably. But I had big, big problems with the initial swarm attack. And I'll tell you why, Justin.
Do you do so?
What is the Enterprise equipped with as far as weapons are concerned?
It's extremely equipped.
I mean, but what I'm saying, it's equipped with lasers. And it's equipped with photon torpedoes. Okay. Now, they tried to fire a photon torpedo and the swarm just kind of moved around it. So why would they not shoot a fucking torpedo out and then when it's in the middle of the swarm, just shoot it with a phaser and blow it up and cause a big fucking chain reaction explosion?
That's a good question.
Or how does the first film end? If you remember, they're being chased by Nero's ship and, you know, the Enterprise is busted. It's completely shithoused. And, you know, Scotty's like, well, we could eject the warp core. And we could blow it up. I think they were trapped in the black hole at that point. He's like, we can eject the warp core and blow it up. And maybe the explosion will push us out. Why didn't they just eject one of the fucking warp cores into the middle of the swarm, shoot it, blow it up, boom, swarm's gone. I'll tell you why, Justin. Okay? Because...
It's a plot device.
Of a plot device, exactly. It'd be far too complicated to do that, and it would work against the requirements of the plot. So because you have to split the crew up and you have to get them to this planet so you can drag out these fucking action scenes. Now, I will say, they pair off the different groups of characters, and they pair Kirk with Chekhov, they pair Uhura with Sulu, and they pair Spock with Bones, which is it's just brilliant.
It's great. It's fantastic. So great. I love the shit out of it. Zachary
Quinto and Carl Urban are amazing in these roles. I still think Carl Urban is hands down the best one of these new cast members. He is so perfect as Bones. So perfect. Every time he's on screen, he's just great. He's absolutely brilliant. I love him. So, you know, in the meantime, Scotty, who is Simon Pegg, who he's paired up with this mysterious character named Jayla. Justin, tell us about Jayla.
What, that she's like really cool looking with a white face with like little black lines running down them. And she's really good fighter. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, because that's all you ever learn about her.
I mean, we know that she mentions her past very, very...
We know she's been marooned on this planet, the same as the Enterprise crew. But really, I mean, she drops like these little nuggets of her backstory, like these tiny little things in passing as her and Scotty are just moving about the ship. But the film never really spends any time investing you in her character. It really aggravates me that this character gets so little development, especially when, you know, she's a big focal point of the trailers. She's a big focal point of one of the posters, at least. You know, I just felt like she was completely ancillary. I felt like she didn't even need to be in the story. She was completely pointless to it.
But as we know, you yourself, being the larger Star Trek aficionado, you know that they meet these characters in passing a lot. It happens a lot on The Next Generation, you know, among the other films where they kind of run into these characters. They're not as well developed as the main cast or anything like that, but we kind of get a glimpse of them, who they are, what they do, and how they interact with the main characters. And in the end, they're a lovable character because they're someone new. They don't always get the most development compared to everybody else.
No, she doesn't get the most development, but what she does get, Justin, is a hefty, hefty chunk of screen time. And so much so, she ends up fighting against Krall's right-hand man or whatever, who apparently killed her parents, which is something that's revealed like right before they fight. And then they keep cutting back to this fight. Now, it was an entertaining fight to watch. It was great to watch.
I loved
visually
how it looked, man. I loved how it was shot. I won't lie. I loved it.
I mean, first of all, his right-hand man, you've seen him in like two other scenes, and you don't care about him whatsoever. And this like last-minute little nugget of information, which is not the only time this script is going to drop important information at the 11th hour, you know, it throws this guy in there out of nowhere, really, really quick. Boom, there he is. He's in there. It's just so forced. And every time they were on screen fighting, I was just like, I don't care about these two. Why am I watching them? You're taking time away from the Enterprise crew, the characters that I actually care about, and you're wasting time with these characters that you've given me absolutely no reason to care about. So I was so disappointed with Jayla. I was really disappointed with Krall, and I know you mentioned this in our review with the Countdown guys, but I want you to go into it a little bit more here.
Oh, yeah. Let's just get right into this, because this is an issue. Anyone that knows the Epic Film guys, we're villain guys. We love villains, and we love well-developed, fleshed-out villains, or villains that actually feel menacing or threatening, or that they have a point.
Because also, challenging the heroes and really being a great villain is what makes the heroes so much better.
Yeah, exactly. So here we have an amazing actor. I would consider him one of the best male actors.
Unrecognizable right now, under all that
unrecognizable
makeup.
Under great makeup, mind you, but as Krall, who this villain just seems as one note as they come. And I feel really bad for Elba, because he did his best with what he was given. By the end of the film, I never felt he was a threat. I never felt like he was this large menacing character above the Enterprise crew. Yes, he does bad things. Yes, bad things happen. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, we're in the year 2016. And how many movies have we seen where the villain does the same thing? Okay. I just wish that there was more for this villain to do. You know, when the, spoiler alert, the end fight between Krall and Captain Kirk, it just felt, it looked cool, but there was no buildup. There was no suspense to it. There was no tension. They absolutely have no deep tension between the two of them. I just felt that casting someone as amazing as Idris Elba as your main villain in a Star Trek film should be awesome. And instead, it was a complete waste to me.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And Krall just continues what has been a summer of really dismal film villains. We just had it last week with Rowan and Ghostbusters. And we've had it in spades over this entire year. And you know what? I wanted to touch on this, Justin. I actually didn't mention this prior on the Countdown review, but did you find Krall hard to understand, especially toward the beginning of the film?
I certainly did, as did my wife. This is something that I found
mind-boggling,
because I saw this, by the way, I didn't want to mention this on the podcast while we're talking about this on our mini-show.
I'm going to the sounds of this whenever I review movies from now on, Justin.
You sounded exactly like him, but I saw this in what's called an AMC ETX, which is the AMC version of their IMAX. It's a large format screen. It's what they call double the high definition, but it's not really. It's not 4K at all. But it's the Dolby Atmos is the surround sound system, which has more channels, more speakers, and it's supposed to be more clear, more powerful. Upon watching the film, I did not understand half the shit that Krall was saying. And
see, and I was wondering if that was just because, of course, I saw it at the AMC in Vestal, which they updated the chairs in, Justin, and I got to rant about this for anybody that's local. They've killed the AMC. They took those beautiful, deep-seated leather recliners that my big 6'4" ass could fit into just fine, and they replaced them with much, much smaller, much stiffer leather recliners that I don't fit on. My head was hanging off the back of the fucking chair the whole time. And I was so uncomfortable when I watched this film, but I thought it was just my sound system. I was like, okay, well, it's AMC. Maybe I just can't understand it. It harkened back to what a lot of people complained about with Bane in The Dark Knight Rises. And I never had an issue understanding Bane in that film, but I could not for the life of me understand what he was saying half of the time.
Well, here's the thing movie. As well, is like in between his actual speaking lines, they had the heavy breathing, which harkened back to like, yeah. Why are you trying to make him sound like Vader? There's no reason for it. It's like, oh, okay, dude, he's not a dog. He's not panting because he just went outside for a run on a sunny, hot day. All right. It didn't make any sense to me. And overall, like for me, it's the biggest disappointment of the film. But that's not to say that I dislike this movie as much as you. I actually enjoyed quite a bit of it. A lot of people were hating on Justin Lin before, you know, they actually saw this movie. But I actually found his direction, for the most part, to be quite enjoyable. I think there was a lot of care put into this.
I would agree with that, too.
You know, and the first thing that came to mind for me, Nick, being, again, going back to this, not as big of a Star Trek fan as far as the original series is concerned or the Next Generation, but this just felt like Star Trek. And this felt more like Star Trek and what Star Trek is than Into Darkness did. That's why, like, I immediately was like, I like this. It feels like Star Trek. And, you know, it does go into some great character development for not only Kirk, but as well as Spock. And those are the characters that we know and we love and that have to have that large focus upon them. And I think that Chris Pine's Kirk, you know, definitely grows within this film. We get a great character arc for him. You know, even though it's a very simple one, it's one that we see in lots of other movies very similar, but we still see it nonetheless. And I really enjoyed that out of the film. But going back to Lin, I think he did a great job at directing this, especially on the shoulders of J.J. Abrams, who did, you know, the first reboot, then Into Darkness, then moved on to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are large, large shoes to fill for anybody.
They're extremely large shoes to fill. And I'll agree with you partially in terms of the character arcs that we get for Kirk, that we get for Spock, if only because they just didn't ring true to me. You know, both of their character arcs in this film are, you know, they're looking about getting off the Enterprise.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and moving off in different directions. And you know these characters are fucking destined to be together, destined to be best friends and go on all these adventures and all this stuff. I know it's an Elseworlds timeline. I know it's an alternate timeline. But you still know that this is their place. This is where they belong. And they've got decades of adventures left to have together. You know, it just rang a little untrue to me. Because it's like, you know, these characters aren't going anywhere. And I think the film could have, because it's not tied to the original canon, it could have gone off in its own direction. It would have pissed everybody off. But they really could have surprised somebody and been like, yeah, oh, yeah, Kirk's leaving the Enterprise or Spock's leaving the Enterprise or whatever. And, you know, I'm not even saying I didn't watch that movie, so I don't know if that would have even played out as well. But at least it would have been something. At least those character arcs would have led somewhere. But well, it just leads back to right where you know they're going to end up anyway. And it leads the plot to be kind of very predictable in that sense.
Of course it is. Of course it is. You know, I had to say this much, though. The film, to me, did have heart, Nick. And that's what it boils down to. That's why I liked it as much as I did. Huge, huge element of this. And I know we talked about this on the podcast a couple weeks ago. The late Anton Yelchin. I love this guy so much and everything he ever did. And this, we finally get Chekhov getting some screen time here. We actually get him a lot of screen time here. You know, he's you know, abandoned on this planet with Kirk, not really abandoned, but you know, they're kind of together.
And they play off one another extremely well.
Extremely well. And every time Yelchin was on screen, you know, being as young as he is, he's younger than me, Nick. He's younger than you. You know, he's such a great young talent that hasn't really gotten the chance to shine in that one role that really made him stand out. I always felt like he was that one guy that was going to pop up and surprise everybody and do that new Oscar-winning role because he was great. It made me extremely emotional. You know, every time he was on screen, it was so sad to see that. And you know, just knowing that he's gone. It's good to hear that, you know, in the next film they're going to do after this one, they're not going to recast Chekhov. They're going to just leave the character completely out of it. And I'm very happy with that decision.
I think that's actually an incredibly smart decision. I think that's probably the best way to go because, man, he's good in this film. He's really, really good in this film.
Yeah.
And you know what? I know we're all paying a little bit more attention to Chekhov's character in this film simply because Yelchin passed.
True.
So we're you know, casting a little bit more of an eye on him. We're definitely keeping an eye on him when he's on screen, but he's still really great in the film. He offers a lot of great comic relief, never feels forced, never feels out of place. He's really, really great when he's hitting on all these different alien women. Kind of picks up a little bit of the Kirk characteristic there from, you know, the original series, the original films and stuff like that, just hitting on all these different aliens.
Well, of course, that, and you're out in space for that long, man. Yeah. I mean, come on, we're all guys. What else are you going to do? You're on a ship, you're stuck with these people. Yeah.
He was great, and I think all of the returning cast, all of the cast is they're so perfectly cast in these roles. They are so great, and I don't care what Vasquez says. Chris Pine is excellent as Kirk.
I love
him.
He's
fantastic.
He's amazing
in the role. Zachary Quinto as Spock, equally fantastic. And I know, and I don't want to spoil it too much because I want everybody to experience it. But there's that moment toward the end of the film when Spock looks at a certain item, and I know it tugged my heartstrings, Justin, and I know it tugged yours. I know it probably tugged everybody.
It tugged
in that audience.
Everybody's. It definitely
everybody
did.
Everybody, like, that was like this film, the rest of it could have been complete and total shit, and I still would have been floored by that one scene because it's so good. It's just such a great, great scene. If you haven't seen this movie yet, or if you have seen this movie, you know exactly what scene I'm talking about. It's such a brilliant moment. So good. Now, when we talked about this over on the countdown, I mentioned the Deus Ex Beastie Boys. And
you didn't like that.
I did not like that. And I'll tell you why I didn't like that. I didn't really elaborate on it as much over there. But it's this plot contrivance. It just pops up out of nowhere where they can put out this signal. And what is the signal supposed to do, Justin? Refresh my memory. What is this signal supposed to do to the swarm?
It's supposed to distract them.
It's supposed to disorient them, right?
Disorient them, yeah.
Except for when they fire up the signal, which is, you know, the Beastie Boys Ex Machina, as I like to call it, it completely fucking destroys the entire thing. How or why? It's never explained in the film how they make this logical leap. It's just like you said, that was the way the signal was explained. Was that it was going to disable and disorient the swarm ships so that they could take them out, or that, you know, they couldn't, you know, stop the ship from getting to the Yorktown. You know, that was what I was thinking it was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, Beastie Boy starts fucking playing and all these ships just start fucking exploding out of nowhere. Big giant explosions in space. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I was so floored by scenes like that, because it just comes out of nowhere. And then to jump over to Krall, you know, of course they have the 11th hour reveal of him being a former Starfleet captain. The biggest problem that I had with that is that it wants to be thematically heavy. It wants to add thematic heft like Into Darkness did. And I think Into Darkness did it well. This drops it in the 11th hour, where all of a sudden at the very end of the movie, you find out, oh, Krall was really the Starfleet captain all along, who was a soldier in, you know, all these different wars. And then the Federation is formed and it's peace, and they throw him into this captain role. Now, it wants to be this commentary about the role of the soldier in peacetime. And I think it really could have done a lot more with the idea of post-traumatic stress and helping transition soldiers into peacetime, and doubled down on this idea of peace versus perpetual war. You know, and I think it's a reality in our modern day world that more needs to be done to help soldiers deal with the demons of the horrors of war, to cope with the post-traumatic stress that they have, and to help them lead normal lives. But this is shoved in here as such a last minute plot point, as such a last minute character detail for Krall, who literally the entire rest of the film, Justin, is a one note Starfleet is bad, bad guy. He just wants to destroy Starfleet. You never find out why. He just doesn't like Starfleet. And
because he's a soldier, and yeah, he doesn't like the new way of life.
They drop all that on you. It's too late in the film, and it's too late to matter. It's too late to have the thematic weight that they wanted to carry. And that really, 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 I mean, I was already pulling away from this movie after the Beastie Boys scene. And then this was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. You know, you had a real chance to make a real good statement about this, and then they just kind of all over the place instead. So any final thoughts on this, Justin, before we rate the film?
I did have to mention this much. This is a double-edged sword for me because I loved the majority of it, but at the same time, there was parts that made me cringe. Anyone out there that knows me and my visual aesthetic for film knows that I hate shaky cam. However, I really enjoyed Stephen F. Wyndham, his cinematography for the film. There are some very creative ways of shooting this movie. There's some awesome 360 shots, especially within the Enterprise and within the ship bodies. I thought it looked like it's a very beautiful looking film. However, I hate shaky cam. So when you're doing action and you're shooting this beautifully and it looks a great wide shot, then you're going to push in further into the action and everything's going to be shaking all over the place. You ruin it. You totally ruin it for me, especially. But it just kind of takes away from the tension in the scene. So I liked wind and cinematography to a point. It looked good. But at the same time, it kind of almost ruined it altogether. I really enjoyed Lin's direction. Obviously, we have Michael Giacchino here again, and he did the score amazingly here. This might even be my favorite score out of the last two, Nick. I think there's a lot of awesome motifs in there and a lot of themes in there that I really enjoyed. Yeah, I love Giacchino, his Star Trek theme.
He is just one of the best composers working today. Of course, one of my favorite television shows of all time, Lost, was just so many great emotional pieces, and he did the soundtrack for Up. He did the soundtrack for the other two films, as you mentioned. Just a great Jurassic modern composer. World. And yeah. Jurassic World as well. Yep. Just a great, great modern composer. I can't say enough good things about Giacchino. He's amazing.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's a lot of great things about this movie, and I did enjoy it, Nick. Unlike you, I mean, I know that you, for the most part, you could say that you enjoyed portions of it, but for me, overall walking out, I could say I liked it. Did I love it? I definitely did not love Star Trek Beyond. I was really hoping that I would, because as we're going to talk about, ladies and gentlemen, as we wrap up the summer movie season, this is one of the most disappointing seasons of the summer for movies and that I've witnessed in years.
This is just another nail in that coffin, too, because even you, who enjoyed it more than I did,
I didn't walk out being excited about it. And I liked Into Darkness a lot. And I mentioned this on our crossover with The Countdown, that I hadn't decided if I liked this or Into Darkness more, whichever one I liked more than the other. I have come to that conclusion now that I still like Into Darkness more than this. Even though that Beyond feels more Star Trek-y than Into Darkness, I just liked Into Darkness slightly more within my rating. So let's move on to ratings, Nick, because this is our mini-sode. This is building up to our regular weekly episode, which I'm really excited about because we're talking about some really awesome special things. San Diego Comic-Con, Stranger Things, hey, Justice League, you ever heard of it? Among other things.
Yeah, stay tuned tomorrow in our normal time slot. You know, we're dropping this a day early, but yeah, tomorrow we've got a full review of Stranger Things coming with Brian Loy. We've got a full wrap-up of all the great news that dropped at San Diego Comic-Con. It's going to be a great episode, Justin. And yeah, I want to jump onto ratings. As you had mentioned, I'm going to go ahead and rate this film first. We both know each other's ratings because, of course, as we've said multiple times, we did talk about this when we recorded with the Countdown guys. I'm giving this a 5 out of 10. I think there were way too many elements of this film that just did not work, and they detracted from the great moments and, once again, a stellar job by the entire Enterprise cast coming back from the other two films. And, you know, I know that they threw, like, just truckloads of money at Quinto and at Pine to get them to reprise these characters again sometime. I don't know when. I don't think they're necessarily pushing forward with a Star Trek 4 immediately, but I know that Paramount definitely threw a lot of money at them just to have the option there, and I can't wait. I can't wait for more of this cast, even though it's going to be with a little bit of a heavy heart because Yelchin will not be part of it. But well, that's my rating of this film here, 5 out of 10.
That's the key thing here that works for me so well is the chemistry of the cast that the majority of all of us have accepted and we enjoy. Quinto's Spock. We have Pine's Kirk. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned Urban's Bones. And we have Peg's Scotty. And of course, Yelchin's Chekhov, among many others. Even, we have, John Zoe Cho's Saldana. Sulu.
Yep, and Zoe Saldana is, of course, Uhura, yeah.
Saldana's great as Uhura, but, you know, she's not left with as much to do in this one, but I love all
of
them.
Yeah, she was kind of pushed to the background in this film, which I didn't like because she was a much better character in the last two films.
The chemistry of this cast is the strongest thing about it, and the strongest thing about this film, which is why I give it as much as I do. I still walked out enjoying this, and I think it's a quality picture. I would definitely recommend it to anyone this summer that wants to see something good. I'd recommend it above many other films that have come out this summer. So me, I'm giving Star Trek Beyond a 7 out of 10. I liked it. It was good. It wasn't great. It wasn't amazing. It was nowhere near a classic. And I would have to say I still like Into Darkness and Abrams' first reboot better. But that being said, it's still a good movie, I think, at its core, and an enjoyable one. So 7 out of 10 for me.
All right. And we definitely want to thank everybody out there for listening to this special Epic Film Guys minisode. And we're going to be doing a few more of these. Justin and Brian are going to be reviewing Jason Bourne when that comes out, and you'll see that land in its own minisode as an episode of the Epic Film Guys Cinema Beat. So stay tuned. And again, our brand new regular episode will land in our normal time tomorrow with a full review of Netflix's Stranger Things and our full Comic-Con wrap-up and two brand new segments. Justin, we are moving fully forward into the future. We got a lot of great things on the horizon. I'm very, very excited. I know. I can't believe it either. So until tomorrow, when you hear that regular episode, my name is Epic Film Guy Nick.
My name is Epic Film Guy Justin. But guess what, you son of a bitch? I figured I'd show up just for the last few minutes because I got drunk. I was drunk at a bar. Someone came in that night, it was last week sometime, and said they had seen some movie that was called Star Trek. And I remember being a young man, and I was homeless for a little while back in the 80s. Maybe it was the late 70s. I don't even fucking know. But I know that me and my family would keep warm next to a barrel on fire. But it was in front of a store that had on display a bunch of televisions. I couldn't hear what the sound was, but they would show reruns of the original Star Trek series.
Wow.
And I enjoyed watching it. At least it looked cool, but I didn't understand what it was about. I'm not very intelligent, so if there's any kind of special things in there that...
Well, there wasn't a lot of booze being consumed in a lot of those Star Trek episodes, so that had to throw you.
Well, what about the new ones? Ain't they drinking alcohol in the new movies?
There's a scene or two of a little drink being had, but definitely not the volume that you're used to. I know you're used to those, those high school kegger movies where everybody's just slamming back cheap swill out of red plastic cups.
Oh, that makes me want to watch every single Jennifer Love Hewitt movie from the late 90s. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to go and watch all... I don't even know. I don't have a place to watch it because I'm homeless. I don't have a place to live. Hey, maybe that Patrick Sherwood fella will let me come over and stay at his house. He told me that he wants a t-shirt with me on it and he'll pay me a quarter to go get me a double cheeseburger at McDonald's. I would gladly allow him to do that.
Well, thank you very much, Homester Justin, for your thoughts on Star Trek. Anything else to close out the show?
Just give me a couple cans of PBR and some Keystone Ice.
We're going to make sure when you crash over at Patrick Sherwood's house, we're going to make sure he's got a full cooler of PBR right on the porch, and he's going to hand you one the second you set foot on the sidewalk leading up to his front door.
I kind of like them warm, kind of like no one's ever let them cold. Like they've been sitting outside at a kegger, like a party that lasted 3 months ago. No one took care of them, and they're just kind of sitting there in a box. I like them.
They're still floating in the stagnant cooler water.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get you some of those. But until next time, again, I am Epic Film Guy Nick.
And I don't know what y'all call me. Someone calls me some hobbit thing. I don't know what that is. But yeah, have a good time. Give me a couple cans of PBR. Donate to this show so I can go to McDonald's and get some McDonald burgers.
And for myself and for Hobbit Justin, apparently. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you at the movies.